I think Sunday's got one. We've got a one coming up here sometime. I think it's Sunday. Got his one sheet. Okay, lesson 11. We're on Genesis 18 and 19 tonight. We'll back up and look at what we did Sunday just to get a little review for everybody. And if you weren't out here Sunday, to give you a catch-up type thing there. Those who might be out of town, whatever. Our slide we've been using to start with each time here recently, we've got Abraham's faith and his fact that he acted on that faith, with an obedient faith, and then the fact that God's made me promises like he did Abraham, and I have faith that he will fulfill those promises, and I am obedient to him with my actions to accept those promises. So that same slide comes in over and over and over. Okay, looking back last time, we talked about, started out talking about God's relationship with Abraham. He came and talked to Abraham. Abraham is very concerned because he's been promised this thing of his descendants would be like the sand of the seashore, but he has no child. He has no son, no offspring to make that happen. But God assures him an heir is coming. And he takes him out and says, he used the sand of the dirt and whatever last time. Now he uses the stars. He'd go out and count the stars. Can you count the stars? That's how many descendants you'll have. Innumerable. Can't keep up with them. And so that's what he uses to show Abraham this time. So Abraham's still concerned. How do I know this promise is coming true? And so God goes back and reminds him the fact he brought him out of the land of Ur to the land he was showing, this land where you are. I've told you to walk the length and breadth of it and to see it. And that promise is coming true. And so they go through this process of a covenant. And it was not uncommon at that time to seal a covenant. It would be a meal type thing. So Abraham was told to kill 3-year-old heifer, a young goat, and a ram, and some birds, and he split them open, and the fire pot from God passed through between them, and they ratified the covenant. And he tells them, to your descendants, I'll give this land all the way from the river of Egypt, which is down at the very southwestern corner of Canaan. It was on the map last time, all the way up to the river Euphrates. A broad spot there that was, and during the time of Solomon, that's kind of where the kingdom went to. And it was at its peak there. So that was the promise there. So then moving to the next chapter, and Sarah, or Sarai, she's known now. I don't know if she gets impatient waiting on God, or if she just thinks God won't get the heir there. So she kind of takes things into her own hands, and she gives Abram her handmaid, Hagar. Said, take her and go into her and have a son by her, and that will be the heir that will be your heir to make all these descendants out there. And I brought up Genesis 2:24 because he already had a wife, and a man shall leave his father and mother and feed to his wife, and then say wives there. So God allowed this during this time. I'm not sure that's what he wanted from the beginning, obviously, but anyhow, Abraham complies with this. He goes into Hagar, and she conceives. And becomes pregnant, and then that's when the trouble starts. So Sarah then regrets what she's done because her plan has obviously backfired. And Sarah is despised by Hagar. She's at the advantage over because she is now wanting to have a child. Her mistress is barren and doesn't have one, and that's a big thing. Plus, it's the whole jealousy part gets cranked up in there. And she blames Abraham for it then, or Abram. You did this. You caused this. Well, whose idea was it to start with? It was hers. So she deals very harshly with Hagar, and Hagar flees. She leaves. Get away from this harsh treatment she's receiving. But an angel appears to her, finds her, after she leaves, and she calls her by name, Hagar, Sarai's maid, addresses her as things and knew who she was, knew who she belonged to, knew the relationship she had there, the relationship, and what she should do. So she tells her to go back to her. Go back to you, the one who owns you. Go back to your owner. Go back to Sarah. Submit to her. But she gives her some promises. She says, you will have multiple descendants. The son you're going to have will be named Ishmael. He'll be a wild man. A donkey of a man, I think is the term that's used there. And he'll have 12 tribes will come from him. It's kind of ironic, the 12 tribes that come from Isaac. And then, you know, Isaac also, the 12 tribes there. And so Abraham's 86 years old and Ishmael is born. So that kind of is that next chapter there. So Sarah's plan, it backfired and says that Hagar come back and she has a son named Ishmael. And Abraham was 75 when he came into the country and now he's 86 years old. So time moves on and now Abraham is 99. And you get to the next chapter, 13 years later, Ishmael's now 13, and he still has no heir by Sarah. And we'll get to that more tonight. So again, he's concerned about that to God. And God comes in again, offers him a covenant. Abraham falls on his face, bows to the ground, and he's talking with God out of that respect, that relationship they have there. Again, tells him he's going to be the father of many nations, and because of that, changes his name to mean a father of multitudes, to Abraham from Abram. And again, tells him, make a great nations from you, and that everlasting covenant to you and your descendants. So that kind of moves us up then, and I'll be your God, and you'll get the land, to come back with the descendants promise and the land promise again in this chapter. Oh, and it's all sealed up. I'm about to get this slide, I'm sorry. All sealed up by the covenant of circumcision. And that's chapter 17. It's the chapter on circumcision, and all your descendants, everyone in your house, bought with your money, born into your house, will be circumcised. That's the seal of the covenant on their part. Otherwise, they're cut off and separate and not part of it. So, Sarah's name is changed to, Sarai's name is changed to Sarah, the mother of many nations. And Abraham laughed, not the same laugh we're going to have with Sarah tonight. Well, nothing's said to condemn this here in this case. Again, he offers Ishmael a substitute, and that's not what God had in plan. So, in the chapter 17, he circumcises his house, Ishmael, and all is born in his house, as God had directed. So, that kind of catches us up ready for chapter 18 tonight. So, get into 18, and some strangers show up. And just picture them coming down the road here. Abraham sees them coming, and he goes out to meet them, and, him, they're men, as far as he knows. So there's three men coming down the road here at this time. And he did not know, if you look at Hebrews 13:2, that he was entertaining angels. And if you look at the chapter, it says the Lord came down and just to see Abraham and to go deal with Sodom, as we'll get to here in a minute. But he didn't know, but he thought they were men. So he brings them in and does four things for them then. He washes their feet, which is the first thing you would do when a stranger came in. Oh, it's the travel on the dusty, dirty road. Wash your feet, get refreshed. He feeds them some refreshments. And then he allows them to rest while he goes out and prepares a feast for them, a meal for them. Tells Sarah to make bread, goes out and selects a heifer, has a servant kill it, prepare it. He tells them to hurry, get it done. And so he prepares a meal for the men. And then you notice they're eating and he's standing off to the side under the tree, waiting, watching. There to serve them, wait on them. And so, wash their feet, give them refreshments, let them rest, and feed them a meal. That's what Abraham did. So then they get into this promise of a son coming. Abraham's going to realize they're not just men, as he thought, as we get into this. So they tell him, by this time next year, you'll have a son. So now, promise has been to kind of a son all along, but now it's gotten thinning. And she laughed to herself. That's going to be a problem as we get in here. And the question that came up when they realized that she had laughed was, is anything too harsh for the Lord? And that's the question that we have to deal with, and she had to deal with too. Is anything too harsh for the Lord? And is anything that he can't do, any miracle that he can't perform? And jump over to Luke chapter 1, verse 37. We'll get this whole passage here, 36 and 37 in a minute. But the phrase here comes in here. with God, nothing is impossible. And we'll read that whole little section here in a minute, where that comes from there. So, Sarah laughs, a doubtful laugh that she will have a son at her age, as they had just said. But God can do this. Nothing's too hard for him. Excuse me. So, I don't know why this was, why this all came about with her laugh and this way it came about. Had she lost her belief by this time? I don't know. It's been a long delay and since the promise was made way back at least, what now, 75 to 99, several years ago, was this all happening to strengthen her faith? I don't know exactly why it all came about. Human wisdom says she would not have a child at her age. It just wasn't going to happen. She's beyond the age of natural reproduction. And so for her to just be told this is going to happen would be something that would be difficult to believe, that she didn't have the faith. But we've got to remember this. Who created everything? And how did he do it? We talked about this back in Genesis chapter 1. God created everything. And this word, omnificent, I got stuck in here, like got this quote here, means creating all things with his unlimited power of creation. So that's what God did. He created all things with his totally unlimited power that he has. And so if he created all things, does he not have control of all things? Can he not do everything? Has his power been reduced since then? Of course not. So even though it was contrary to nature, he could do this if that's what he chose to do. And that's the point that has to be understood here. So Abraham is now 99 years old. Sarah laughs within herself. Again, this is a quote from some commentators thinking about this. At the length of time that got delayed here, did that challenge her faith from making it this time? I don't know. But didn't that, to her, that's just this whole announcement that by this time next year you'll have a son. It's incredible. And you can see why it would be. I mean, she's well past the age of childbearing. So, again, phrase out of the verse here, 14, is anything too hard for the Lord? That's the question was asked. At this appointed time next year, I'll return and you'll have a son. That was it. So the question comes up, when you think about it for a minute, is God limited? Is God limited in any way with his power? So I'll go back here and think about a couple of the verses to kind of illustrate this point here a little bit. Let's go to the New Testament. Think about the birth of John the Baptist and of Jesus. Here's where the passage comes in Luke 1. This time look at verse 36 and 37. So this is the angel speaking to Mary, telling her about her own situation and what's going to happen, but she's also bringing in that of Elizabeth. It was, of course, a relative of Mary's. So she said it. The angel says, Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age. Now, what was unusual or unique about Elizabeth having a child? She was just like Sarah. She was past the age of childbearing. But the angel comes and tells her that. And you remember John's situation with his not speaking and all this. It ties into that. Because she was called barren. She was beyond the age where she would have a child. God appears, angel tells her, you have a child, and she does. She's now 6 months pregnant. And that's where the phrase comes in here now, with God, nothing's impossible. Now, contrast that with the last part of the verse. What's unusual about Mary having a child? Is she past the age of childbearing? No, right, the opposite. She is young, probably quite very young. What's unusual about her situation? No husband. Not married. So here's two situations entirely different where God deals with both of them. One well past the age of childbearing and has a child. One doesn't have a husband. Has a child with the Holy Spirit. Both very unusual. But God can have it. That's what the power he has to do that. So that this, I use those two just to kind of illustrate the same thing that happened with Sarah back here. Yeah, she's past the age of childbearing, but God can handle it. Nothing's too hard for the Lord. So if we think about that, God created the earth, everything on it by spoken word. I mentioned that earlier. So why would Sarah doubt his power to do anything? It's a challenge to her faith. It's the time lapse or whatever here has had her doubting that this will happen at her age. So the question I have is, what do you and I learn from this? Yes, it could be a delayed time. We don't know when it's going to happen. Yep. But, do we ever doubt God's power? Maybe not out loud or whatever, but just think in your own mind. Do you ever get challenged and doubt, well, I really want this. Can God do this? Do we put our total trust in Him? When you pray, do you have that absolute, total confidence that God can do what you're asking Him to do? Or is that, do we cast all our cares on Him? Or are there some things He can't handle? Or do we sometimes, we know better than that, but we don't act like better than that? Just out some thoughts. All right, on with our story. So Sarah denies that she laughs. And she said, I do not laugh. She said that, why? Are you afraid? You ever been pinned down where you know you're fixing to be accused of something and the way out of it is to tell a story? Hope we all learn better than that. This is kids down there somewhere, but Sarah got caught. I didn't laugh. I thought she knew she had, she would be doubting in it. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Totally. But look what the answer came back. No, you did laugh. Back. So it reminds me of the lie here. Who is she lying to? Who is here? Who are those strangers? Yeah, the Lord came down, okay? Now, I don't know how it worked, what form they came down, represented by these angels that were in men's appearance. Don't get into all that, but the Lord was there, either in some bodily form or through His angels or what. But He was lying to God, she was. Same thing with Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5. And when Ananias asked Satan, Peter asked Ananias, why did Satan fill your heart to do this? To lie to the Holy Spirit. Look down later in that chapter, it says very specifically, you lied to God. So, can't lie to God. They can't. We can't. We can't deceive Him. It's not deceivable. You did lie. That's what He said. Laugh to herself, not out loud. He did laugh. So that kind of wraps up that little episode in the chapter here now. We move on now to, as they start turning their attention now to what they came down for, that was to visit Sodom and Gomorrah and see the situation there. So in verse 17, the Lord says, am I going to hide from Abraham what I'm doing? This stranger comes up and says, I'm about to inflict all this doom on Sodom. Why would he be concerned that Abraham had anything to do with this? Who's there? Lot's there, okay? Lot's there. Remember that? Choice he made, we'll get to that here in a minute. So he's about to put this great calamity, if you will, on Sodom because of their enormous wickedness. He says, I need to tell Abraham about this. And he does it, if you look at this, because look at the reason he gives. Abraham's going to be a great mighty nation. He's going to be God's chosen nation. And he just had that relationship with Abraham that with his nephew there, I need to tell him about it. He's like, you want to tell a friend about something that's going to happen. So he decides to disclose to Abraham what's about to happen. And it's hard to see. I pulled out on this map enough to get in real close because I wanted to get the lay of where everything is. Way over here is Moab, which is down south. The Dead Sea is way up here, actually. This is the very lower part of the Dead Sea. So Jerusalem's going to be off over here, top of the Dead Sea up here somewhere. So way down here at the bottom. Probably, what scholars say, this part of the Dead Sea wasn't even there at that time. It's just that the plains that Lot saw when he pitched his tent towards Sodom, down this area down here. That little spot right there has got Zoar on it. We'll get to that later in the lesson. We were talking about that song with the king from there. Zoar and question mark. We don't know for sure where it was. This mountain right up here is called Mount Sodom. So this is the area where they think Sodom and Gomorrah was, that southern part of the Dead Sea. Okay. So kind of keep that in mind, the area we're talking about here. So, verse 20 then, God says, telling Abraham now, because the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grave. So I know you know this story, but you got to keep that fixed in our minds. The sin of Sodom, the sin of the city of Sodom is terrible and God is tired of it. He's going to do something about it. So the question we ask then is God, are God's actions justified? What did he say? I'll never destroy the earth again. What? By water and the earth. But now he's picked out one city or two cities here, area that is totally, totally depraved, wicked. He said, I'm going to destroy it. I don't want wickedness to spread. I'm going to wipe it out. Abraham, of course, knows Lot's in Sodom. So he's concerned about it when God starts telling him about it. So Abraham says, Lord, you got to envision the relationship now. Abraham's going to be very careful how he words things. The vision of the relationship now that Abraham has with the Lord. As he says, but if there are 50 righteous people there, would you destroy them? Would you wipe out 50 righteous souls because of the wickedness of the city? And God says what? No, there's 50 righteous people there I want. And so Abraham asks again, so well, if it happened to be just 45 there, would you do it for that? God says, no, there's 45 that I want. Now, don't remember which one of it is, but Abraham says, oh, but can I be so bold as to speak again? So he asked for 40, and then 30, and then 20, and then down to 10. 10 righteous souls? What does God say? For 10 righteous souls, I would just want to see. There's a less than 10 righteous souls, obviously, in Sodom. Now, why is Lot there? How did Lot get there? Made that choice. Back chapter 13. Toward the well-watered green plains and left Abraham with what's left. And he pitched his tent towards Sodom. He said. And back in that very verse, back in chapter 13, we first studied this, but the last sentence of there. But Sodom, the men of Sodom, were exceedingly wicked and sinful toward the Lord. Like, at the time, Lot made this choice. They were already wicked. So, while one of the strangers is still talking to Abraham, the other two go to Sodom. And they walk into the city, and Lot's sitting there at the gate, and he gets up, he bows down to them, showing them the same type of respect that Abraham has shown them up front, and he invites them to come to his house. And spend the night with him. They said, no, we'll stay here in the open square. He said, no, no. And he persuades them to come at his house. He prepares a meal for them. He feeds them. And men of Sodom get involved. So the men come and they, Lot's house, and we're over chapter 19 now, verse 5, come to Lot's house and they say, send out the men who came into town. Send out these strangers that are under your roof. Send them out that we may know them carnally. That's what the New King James Version says. Another version here says, may take our pleasure with them. But the NIV, it says, may have sex with them. So, homosexuality is the whole involvement here. Sin of Sodom. Homosexuality. They refer to as depraved people. A crime here that's beyond talking about. Abominable. I mean, what word do you describe it? It's Solomon. That's where the word comes from. We get from the city of Solomon. So, Lot says, no, you can't do that. We would not send him out. The outside, if you go visualize him out on the porch talking to the men of the city, and the strangers are inside, his daughters are inside. So he offers his daughters to the men of the city. Daughters have never been with a man, virgins, and he's trying to protect those men who are his responsibility. They're under his roof, they're his guests. And that's the choice he makes. Try to protect them, who they are. That's the choice he made. Again, lack of faith. Could God handle a situation? So, here's a big point. We're going to talk about this in the next slide or two. Two moral evils. I have two choices. Which one are you going to take? Neither. Okay? We don't commit sin to avoid something else we think is going to be bad. We don't commit sin, I mean, to avoid something we think is going to be bad. We think good's going to come from it. We don't do sin. Look good on, take good out of the end of that. Trust God. That's what it comes down to. If we're in a tight spot, we think it's going to sin to get out of it, we don't sin. We trust God to get out of it, to deliver us. We've already said what we already said about God. Is anything too hard for him? Can he handle it? We have our total trust in him. So, Lot offered his daughters, two moral evils we choose, neither. Trust is in God. So, Lot apparently tries to justify this improper means of getting there, or the good is going to come out at the end. He's going to save the strangers in his house. He'll do that by sacrificing his daughters to these men out here. That's his proposal. Men say this cry is so strong, we're going to destroy it. That's what we're here for. They reach out, if you remember, pull Lot back in, and you got to get out of this place over here. We're going to wipe it out. You go tell their sons-in-law about it, and they think he's joking. So they come back, they get your wife, your daughters, get out of here as you wipe out, and as you take them by the hand and lead them out. Go to the mountains, escape for your life. Don't stop on the plains. King James says you'd be, New King James says they should be destroyed. Your revised center says you'd be consumed. This destruction is coming. You'll be part of it. You don't leave, go, run. So we know from all this, it's not something ordinary is coming. It's a major, major destruction that God's going to bring on these two cities. The Lord brings down fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah from the heavens and wiped out those cities, the plains. I looked at the very last phrase in this verse here. Wiped out the vegetation. He destroyed the place. All that happens, the city, the vegetation, it's gone. The sin was so great. God wiped it out. Lot's wife. God don't say it. Don't look back. She looked back, she came to her salt. That's all we know about it. That's all that we're told about it. A lot of folks have written a lot of stuff about why, what really happened to her, what a pit of salt was like. Read all their speculations, but all the Bible tells us is, you look back, you can't put us off. Now, where's Abraham during all this time? He's back at his place. Text says he looks down that direction, and what he sees? Smoke rising up. He knows Lot's down there. Don't know what's happened. Lot has bargained with the strangers to send him not to the mountains, but to the small city of Zoar. He goes there. But it's not long later then we find him laying in the mountains in a cave with his daughter. I don't know how much time elapses between the time they saw Gomorrah destroyed and they go to Zoar and they go to the mountains. I haven't seen any indication there. But some amount of time has elapsed. I can't imagine these daughters doing what they're about to do when they just lost their home and their city and their engaged to and their mother and ran. I mean, that just doesn't fit to be right the next day type thing. It's got to be some time lapse in here with this. And they've got wine sufficiently to get their father drunk. So they become concerned about their descendants, about somebody preserving Lot's name, family lineage there. So they get Solomon, get Lot drunk. And one of them goes in with him one night, on the next night, and they have then the older one, Moab, father of the Moabites, and the younger, and Ammi, the father of the Ammonites. Now, what were they thinking? I don't know why they do this. Doubtless any central desire. They wanted to preserve the family line. Don't know. Maybe they thought their husbands had been destroyed in the city. They got nobody to turn to. Preserve the family line again. But look how they went about it. Somehow, and I really put these slides up here for you to think about how or why they did it, and somehow they justified it. It's okay to do this. In their mind, they had to, because they proceeded to do it. They convinced themselves it was okay. Yeah, that's what they had seen around them. Okay, even though they were pulled out as righteous, they don't, what influence they have around them. And they know what? Would Lot have done this in a sober situation? They wouldn't have taken the time to get him drunk 2 nights in a row, right? So they felt it necessary to do all this. So here's what we'll get into. Again, like what Lot had done with offering his daughters. They sought out to justify the means used because of the goodness that's going to happen at the end of it. And that's the phrase of justifying the ends justifies the means, right? The results I'm going to get justifies or makes right what it takes to get there. It's the reason behind this. The question I ask is, when is that? When is that first sentence there ever good? When are we ever be able to justify the results for how we got there when we get there is wrong? And the answer's got to be what? Never. Why? If what we're doing is simple to get there, it's wrong. Don't do it. Okay, what's the good results? It's going to come to the end over here. The end does not justify simple action to get there. It's always wrong. So, look at this. Alright, a little clicker. Alright, pass it. Alright. Our singing sounds better with music. What's the end result? Better singing, right? What we're trying to accomplish. So if you really believe singing sounds better than music, we'll use music to get better singing. Well, not if the action to get there is wrong. Or ball team to get people to come to church. What's the end? What are we trying to accomplish? More people come to church. Is that good? Church-sponsored ball team to get there? You're justified. You see a lot of this these days. Women preachers or women elders because of their ability or their education level. We have a lot of highly educated women now. So because of that, we want to take advantage of that and use it. So the end result over here is qualified, educated people in these positions of leadership. But you can't do simple action to get there. I got a couple more up here. Yeah. Fellowship rooms. Promote unity. You want unity? Sure we do. Pray for it quite often. Is that the way to get it? The same thing, same reasoning that Lot went through, the same reason that his daughters went through. Or church sponsored schools do the work of the parents because the parents are too busy, can't get it done. Yeah. So, where are we? Summarizing. Lot left the influence of Abraham. That went. Right up in Sodom. God knew about the wickedness of Sodom, the city. The judgment of God comes on the city. But we also see the righteousness of God as he has mercy on Lot and his family. And then, at the end of it, we see the sin of Lot and his father. That's kind of what we'll be in a nutshell tonight. I got a couple more slides. Ask this. Let me make the homosexuality stuff for a minute. Two quick comments. One is, this verse here comes to mind, of course, always. A man and a woman. A man leave his father, mother, cleave his wife. That's what God intended. Okay. There's an article on the news last night. I saw it. Some of you may have seen it. What's happening in the city of Houston, Texas? Now, this time today. They subpoenaed all the pastors, all the preachers, all the ministers in the city of Houston to send any sermons, any material that they have done in teaching their congregation about, and it lists three or four things there, sexual preferences, homosexuality, that's what those are, things along that line. The city has subpoenaed those things, those items, from all the church leaders in the city. Guess what the mayor of Houston is? The lesbian. Because she's got this past. But here in our day and time, the city of Houston, Texas, has subpoenaed all this material from all the churches in Houston. They want to look and see what's being taught. It's not, but basically what it says is how great it would be if marriages were what God wanted them to be. Each one acting in the most tender actions toward their spouse to fulfill their wishes, contribute every way to their comfort and happiness of the other one. Marriage like it was put together in the original institution, pure, suitable, and how few marriages that we have this day and time that meets that criteria. Now, I haven't said this much about homosexuality. Albert, you got that passage, Romans 1. I was going to read it. It's on the screen up here, but he can read it out. Romans 1, we'll start verse 26. Now, I just want you to look at the highlighted passage that's on the screen up here, underlined as he reads through here. This will wrap us up here.